Motherhood Podcast. This is Stephanie, your host, and today we're going to kick off a mini-series in honor of Pregnancy and Infant Loss Awareness Month, which is October of every single year. And before I jump into this episode, you guys, I just want to make sure that I say, this series are stories of loss and deep loss, and we do not hold back, and in fact, I've asked them not to. We do not buffer anything we are saying because it might make someone else uncomfortable, because this is our truth. This is their truth. This is their story. And so if you are in a place where these stories could be a trigger, then I advise you to listen at a different time. And the goal is to, number one, change the daggone narrative around pregnancy and infant loss. Like, there's generations before us never talked about this. Like, it was kind of this don't ask, don't tell type of deal. And even now, people will say to, you know, wait until you're 12 weeks to announce you're pregnant just in case something happens. But here's the deal. Whether I have told you or not, the loss still happened. There is still a baby that should be here and it isn't. Like, my soul is still grieving whether or not our culture told me it was okay to make it public or not. And today I interview a friend of mine who has experienced two stillbirths. And today we say their names and we tell their story, and Alex tells her story, and we cry and we include them in our child count, and we honor their memory by remembering their due dates. We educate on what was helpful during this time and what was not helpful during this time. And we know, you guys, we know that so many people do not engage with a mom who is grieving a loss of a pregnancy or of an infant because they literally have no words. They do not know what to say. But here's the deal. There are no words. There really are not. But your presence and your just remembering of our children is the most life-giving thing that you could absolutely give us. And there are so many different types of losses, you guys. And today I interview Alex and we talk about stillbirth. And there will be others where we talk about miscarriage, and then we talk about chemical and ectopic pregnancies. They are all different from each other, but underneath everything, one thing is for certain. There is a baby that should be here with us on this earth, and they are not. And behind every single story, there is a mother and a family who is grieving. And so today we talk about this. And so here is Alex's story.
So my name's Alex, and my story is a little bit different about loss because we've actually had two full-term losses. And the beginning of our story starts back in 2013. Doug and I were married for 2 years and got pregnant relatively easy. Obviously, we were excited and had a smooth pregnancy, no issues. We went to birthing class because we wanted a natural birth. So we sought out a doctor who is well known in the natural birthing community for delivering babies naturally. So we felt like we were, you know, checking all the boxes. So we got to about 37 weeks and I started getting some pain in my upper rib area, in my stomach. And I kept telling my doctor, like, this, you know, is this normal? I'm a first time mom. I don't know if this is normal. So he just kind of blew me off, basically told me, you know, it was the baby sitting in my ribs. But go back a little bit. So we didn't know we had a little boy named Dougie. We did not know that he was a boy. We were being surprised. So that was like my number one thing when we got pregnant. I said, oh, I wouldn't be surprised. Like, how exciting will it be when we have this baby and don't know what it's going to be and be able to announce like, it's a boy, it's a girl. Mm-hmm. So at 37 weeks, I started complaining and I was kind of blown off, but I didn't know any better. I had never heard of any complications. I had never been talked about anything. So I kind of was just chalked it up as, hey, like, I don't really know what I'm doing. Like, I'm pregnant. You know, I'm young, dumb.
Yeah.
Right. I'm uncomfortable. Right. The baby was big at that point. So my pain continued. So over the course of the next 2 weeks, my pain got worse. It was harder for me to breathe. I saw my doctor twice and told him, and he just basically told me the same thing every time. You probably have heartburn. You're okay. Like, everything, you have a low risk pregnancy. This is normal. You're fine. So I got to my, I was going in for my 39-week appointment, and I said to Doug the night before, hey, we're delivering this baby tomorrow. There's no way that I can maintain this pregnancy any longer. I was miserable, so uncomfortable. I couldn't breathe. I wasn't sleeping. So basically, we packed our bags to go to the hospital to deliver after my appointment. We were going to tell the doctor, like, you don't have a choice.
Right. We're 39 weeks. We're going.
Right. Right. And at that point, I mean, he's a natural doctor, so he would have let us go over if we wanted to go over. He didn't really, he's not known to do C-sections and induce and all that. So we didn't really know what he was going to say to us, but at that point, I wasn't going back home. I knew that. So we go in for our appointment. It was on, I think, a Tuesday morning. And we went into the doctor's office, went into the room, and the sonographer was in there, and she was kind of checking me just like they normally do. And she, because they were like, well, let's just check you, make sure that the baby's not getting too big and all that. So she checked me, and she said, like, hold on, I'll be right back. And I remember looking at Doug, and I said, like, is that normal? Like, should she have left the room? And I looked at Doug, and I said, like, I'm really scared. And he was like, it's fine, it's fine. Like, she's just going to talk to the doctor. Well, she comes back in with the doctor on the phone. So he wasn't even in the office. And puts the doctor on the phone with me, and he says, you know, I'm sorry, your baby died. And I remember I dropped the phone, and I just looked at Doug, and I just started crying. And I said, what? Like, is this? And so, you know, I was just like, is this real life? So basically, she just asked me, like, when's the last time you felt the baby move? And I had felt him move that morning because he had the hiccups. So I said, like, he was moving this morning. Like, when I got up, right. I got up to shower, and he was moving. It was like 6 o'clock. And, he had the hiccups and all that. So basically they said, she said, the doctor's not here. He needs to, like, meet with you. Can you come back in 2 hours? So she made us leave. And Doug and I had driven separately to the appointment because, he was working and I was home and all that. So we got into the same car, and we just, like, looked at each other, and we're crying, and we don't really know what to do. So we're like, well, what do we do for the next 2 hours? So we went back in to see him, you know, in a couple hours when he got back in the office. And I remember it was a Tuesday. He wanted me to wait until Friday to deliver the baby. And I just looked at him and I said, I'm going to the hospital to deliver this baby, whether you like it or not. Like, yeah. I'm already miserable. I'm already uncomfortable. Like, I don't know what's going on. So he said, okay, go to the hospital. So we got to the hospital and we check in. He kind of goes over with me kind of what my options are and encourages me to have a vaginal birth. Because he says, you know, you're young, you can have more kids. You don't want a C-section right away. Like, if we can deliver this baby vaginally, we should. So I said, okay, fine. So they were going to induce me and, let me deliver vaginally. And I said, you know, can you just tell me, like, what sex of the baby? Is it a boy or a girl? So basically they looked, and he was just so big that they couldn't tell if it was a boy or girl. So we didn't find out if it was a boy or girl until he was born. So we got in the hospital, we started to get induced. They did all my blood work. And at this point, we're just thinking, well, okay, the baby died. And our doctor told us, like, sometimes this happens. There's no reason. Like, we don't know what, why, you know, we'll be able to maybe find out more as we go, or, you know, as we, once we deliver him. But right now, you know, things like this happen. So they did some blood work. And I remember it was about an hour after I was induced, the doctor or the nurse comes in and she says to me, we're a little bit worried, and we think you're really sick. So we are going to, like, speed this process up, and the doctor's going to come talk to you. And I remember her looking at Doug and saying, we think she has something called HELP. Well, mm-hmm. I didn't know what HELP was. Doug didn't know what HELP was. We had never, nothing, none of that had ever been discussed with us at all. So HELP is a serious complication of high blood pressure. So most of the time when women get preeclampsia, which is the main reason why you are getting your checkups all throughout pregnancy, is because your doctor wants to watch for preeclampsia. Right. So that they say that preeclampsia can turn into HELP. So, and signs of preeclampsia are protein in your urine. That's why you get a urine sample every time you go. High blood pressure. That's why they take your blood pressure. And then high liver enzymes. But usually a normal person wouldn't know that because that has to be blood work. So I didn't have any of those. So I didn't have high blood pressure. I never had protein in my urine, even up until that morning when I went into the doctor's. My lab looked completely normal. So then when I went in, at that point, my liver enzymes were like basically super, super high. And then we found out that I was almost like fully bled out. I think my platelets were down super, super low. So basically they said, like, we have to get this baby out and we have to get you on medicine because, you know, there's always a risk that something could happen. Well, at home, all my family is Googling what is HELP. Right. And everybody's seeing that it's the number one cause of maternal death. And they told us, they specifically told Doug and I, like, do not Google anything. Like, let's just get through this and go from there. So we ended up delivering Dougie, but because I had HELP, I couldn't get an epidural like I wanted to because I said, I don't want to feel this. Like, I just want to get him out and be done with it. So we ended up delivering him, and I had to deliver him naturally because I couldn't get an epidural because of my blood count being so low. So there's risk of, like, hemorrhaging and all that. So in the midst of all that, of me delivering him, I'm essentially fighting for my life at that point. So I was drugged up on medicine. My blood pressure at one point got to like 220 over like 100 and something, 150. Wow. I think Doug said, Doug kind of lost it at one point when the nurses, it was overnight and they constantly take your blood pressure and Doug's watching the monitor like nonstop. And the nurse had to come in and tell him, like, we're watching her. Like, we know, we know. 'Cause he's like, what is going on? Like, her blood pressure is getting so high. So through all that, we did get to spend some time with Dougie. I had to be on magnesium sulfate for a whole, I think it was 24 hours. So I was a little drugged up, but I still got to spend time with him. We kept him about, it was probably about 8 hours, 6 to 8 hours. We had some family come and meet him. And I remember, like, when we delivered him, like, all Doug wanted, like, our whole pregnancy was a boy. Like, he just, the whole time, he's like, I just want a boy. I just want a boy. Mm-hmm. Whereas I wanted a girl. So it's like, I want a girl first. So when I delivered him, like, I remember Doug caught him and, you know, pulled him up and he said, like, it's a boy. And I just remember being so angry, like, just angry at God, angry at everybody. Like, this is just not fair. So that was extremely hard. I was devastated that I spent the whole pregnancy not knowing what he was. Right. Because we didn't even have a name for him at that point. To be honest with you, we're not good with names. It's hard for us to come up with names. So we didn't even have a name. And I remember when he came out and Doug said, it's a boy. He said, like, I want him to be Doug Jr. And I said, that's completely okay with me. So we did get to spend some time with him. And then, you know, we're in the hospital and I remember the grief counselor came in, you know, quickly, and she didn't stay long. But I remember her coming in and saying, like, well, you have to, like, what are we going to do with his body? Like, we have to figure that out. Like, you know,
wow.
And so we said, well, what does that look like? And they're like, well, you guys have to call funeral homes. Like, you got to have a funeral or you got to do something. So Doug did all of that. God bless him. I mean, he was so strong and he called these funeral homes and had no clue what to ask. Like, I remember the first phone call he made, the person was not very friendly on the other line. And he's like, I don't know. We have a dead baby. Like, what do we do with it? You know, like, yeah. We have him here. Like, you know, so that was extremely hard. We just didn't know kind of even what to do. I mean, to be honest, and that was hard. So we finally found a great funeral home. They were really reassuring. We wanted to make sure that they got him out of the hospital before we left. So that was, you know, one of our things is we just didn't want him to stay there when we knew, like, we would be going home. Sure. So at that point, this was back in 2013. So since then, there has been more developments on something called a cuddle cot, which keeps your baby cool so that your baby doesn't start the, like basically the death process. And at, you know, we got to about 6 or 7 hours and Dougie's skin started peeling and he just looked bad. And I remember Doug saying like, it's time, it's time. And that was probably the hardest thing I've ever done is like send him away because I knew like I would never see him again. I would never get to hold him. Like that was the hardest like point is just sending him out of the room.
Yeah.
So, but once he was gone, we felt really good because we had like these nurses that were sent from heaven. I'm not kidding you. They were so reassuring, like so nice. And I remember the one nurse like carrying him out saying like, I'm going to take care of him. Like Dougie has a place with me. Like he's not going anywhere. I'm going to stand here until the funeral home gets here. And so we were like, oh, thank God for her. So fast forward a little bit, we had a, I got out of the woods, obviously. I recovered pretty well. And then we had a funeral for him that was basically just close friends and family. We didn't want like something huge. And then we went home. And I remember a nurse, the day we were leaving the hospital, I remember a nurse saying like, hey, you know, like I experienced this 30 years ago. She was, you know, an older lady. And she said she was talking to us about her experience, which was extremely helpful to hear somebody else talk about it. Because our whole pregnancy, it was low risk. Like I don't even know if stillbirth was even like something I had ever even thought about in my life. And I was always like, why didn't I ever hear about this? Like I took a 14-week birthing class and they never talked about stillborns. Like what is going on? So I remember her telling us like, you know, what's going to happen is you're going to go home and people are going to shower you with cards and gifts and whatever else. And they're going to love on you for about a week. And then after a week, things are going to go back to normal for everybody else. And you're going to feel like the world is standing still. And if I could see her today, I would tell her she was, I've never heard something so right in my life. She was so right. I mean, our friends and family were so great, but they didn't know what to do for us. And at that point we had no other kids. So we went home. I remember God bless my sister-in-law. I called her when I was in the hospital and I said, can you get everything out of our house and put or everything out of the main parts of the house and put it in the nursery? Cause we had a full nursery. I mean, I remember the night before the doctor, Doug was building the bassinet that was going to go next to our bed. So I told her, get everything out. So she, like a mad woman, I'm sure, went over and got everything out, loaded it all in the nursery, and, like, locked the door. So that was a blessing because when we came home, we were just like, oh, my God, like, we don't want to face this. So that's kind of our first part. We got pregnant pretty quickly on accident with Declan, our almost six-year-old. And he was born 11 months after Dougie was born. So his birthday is actually next weekend. So we had Dougie in November of 2013 and we had Declan in October of 2014. So after I had help, I'm considered high risk. So I had to go to a high risk doctor after that. And I was monitored very closely. I got tons of blood work. We kind of figured out what we thought may have happened. You know, vitamins I had to take, some clotting stuff that I had going on. So, you know, my doctor was amazing. And he said, this is your plan of action. Like, we're going to have a successful pregnancy. So when I was pregnant with Declan, smooth pregnancy, it went extremely well. They delivered me at 38 weeks with Declan because they say that, so if I can explain this right, so at whatever point you got help with in your help pregnancy, the chances of you getting it again beyond that gestation that you were like triples if you go past that gestation. So I was 39 weeks. So he said, we don't want you to go past 38 weeks. So with Declan, we delivered him at like 38 weeks and like 2 days. I think that was probably like what they told me. And I didn't choose. Like they just said, this is when we're going to deliver you. Right. So great. No problem pregnancy. And he's my little rainbow baby. And he's let me know it ever since. So he's a pistol. So then fast forward, you know, another year and a half, we get pregnant with Tatum. And it's funny. So we get pregnant with him and we go back to my high risk doctor and, you know, he's so thrilled to see us and happy and excited. And he comes in and like, he's talking to us and he's like, okay, like we have your due date. And Tatum was kind of planned, but kind of not. Like we were just kind of like, whatever happens. Right. So we go in and to get our due date we have our due date, but he's like to get our delivery date. So like they plan out like, when are they going to deliver us usually? So we go in and he looks at me and says, okay, like we're delivering you on November 21st. And I look at Doug and that is Dougie's birthday.
Oh my goodness.
So I said, I looked at the doctor and he saw my look. So he looks at me and he says, oh, that's Dougie's birthday. And I said, yes. And he was like, okay, like we can change it. And I was like, no, like let us sleep on it. Let us pray about it for a little bit. And, you know, we'll decide like as we get closer. Well, from that day forward, we knew like that was Dougie like talking to us. We said, like, I joked all the time, like that's just Dougie making sure that he has cake on his birthday. Oh. So we said, like, we're gonna stick with November 21st. So Tatum was born 3 years to the day that Dougie was born, 3 years later. So he has the same birthday as Dougie. So we always light a candle for Dougie in Tatum's candle and the boys know about him and all that. So at this point we've had three boys, and we want to try again because we've always said we wanted three or four kids, and we get pregnant again. And we're at this point, we've had two healthy boys. It's a stillbirth is kind of far out of our mind. I mean, you always worry about miscarriage, I feel like. So we worried about that. But once we got past, you know, 13, 14, 15 weeks, we were kind of like, okay, like we can do this again. And we found out pretty early on, it was probably around 16, 18 weeks that we were pregnant with a girl. So I was beyond thrilled. I mean, I thought I would never get a girl, first of all. Mm-hmm. And I was like, oh my gosh.
Know the feeling.
Yes. Like, yes, exactly. You did. So I'm like, I'm never going to get a girl. And then when we found out she was a girl, I was just like, oh my gosh. And the boys were so excited. I mean, Declan understood it a little bit better than Tatum. So, so her name's Ruby. We were pregnant with her. We didn't have a name picked out, but we knew, you know, we were leaning towards a couple names. Ruby is my grandma's name. Who passed away when I was in college, not when I was in college, but right before Doug and I got married. So fast forward. So when you're high risk, you get monitored 2 or 3 times a week. So I had 3 appointments a week. I was getting stress tests, like non-stress tests to make sure that she was okay. I was seeing the doctor, I was getting urine, and that happens from 28 weeks on. So I went to my 34-week appointment and I got my non-stress test. Everything was great. No worries. Roll around to the next day. And it was about dinner time. I was making the boys dinner. And I said to Doug, I haven't felt Ruby move in a while. But I also had 2 toddlers. So I was like,
forget that we're right. pregnant. Yeah.
Right. And I'm like, I was 34 weeks, so I was big. But I'm like, did I just not feel her? So Doug kind of like said, like, you know, I'm sure it's fine. Like just drink some water, drink some cold water and go rest or whatever. So that whole night, that I slept, I never felt her move. Well, obviously. And I remember I didn't sleep at all. And I woke up that morning and I said to Doug, like, we need to go to the hospital. And he knows, like, I'm not an overly dramatic person. Like I usually am like, I can handle it. Like it's fine. I don't want to bother anybody. I don't want to go to the doctor too early, you know, like when I don't need to. So when I said that, I mean, he tells me now, like he knew like something was wrong. And when I said that, I immediately started crying and I said, I didn't feel her move all night. Like I know she's dead. And Doug's like, don't say that. Like, I'm sure she's fine. You know, we were just at the doctor yesterday. Like, you literally, we were just at the doctor yesterday morning. And I said, I know, but I know there's something wrong. So I called my doctor. My doctor's like, oh my gosh, Alex, like, just go in. Like, we'll check you and we'll get you on your way. So I went in and to the hospital and I said, you know, I'm here to like check in. I haven't felt her move in a day in like almost 24 hours. Well, actually, it was probably about 12 hours. Mm-hmm. And that is the importance of counting kicks. I mean, I didn't count kicks during the day, but every night when I laid in bed, I counted kicks. So I could always get to my 10 kicks within like 2 minutes. And that night when I laid down, I did my counting kicks and didn't feel anything. And then when they asked me the next day, like, when did you feel her move? And I'm like, well, I don't know. Like, I was like having nightmares about it, like flashbacks to Dougie. Like, I'm like, I don't know when I felt her move. Like, I feel like I felt her move in the middle of the night, but it could have been a dream. So basically they checked me, the nurses did at first, and they're not allowed to tell you that, the baby died. So they have to wait for, a resident to come in, and then the resident has to get your doctor. So we're going through all these people like checking me, and I just keep saying to them, like, just tell me she's dead. Right. And finally my doctor came in and he just like put his hand on my shoulder and he was like, I'm so sorry. And I remember, like, I think I was in shock, obviously. But I looked at Doug and I just said, like, this does not happen twice. I just felt like so betrayed by God. Like, I was like, oh my God, this is so awful. Like, this, I never thought that that would happen to me again. So luckily, and then at that point I'm thinking like, I'm going to die. Because obviously I was sick last time with Dougie and he died. So I'm assuming that they're related. Mm-hmm. Come to find out, I delivered her fine. Come to find out, they think that it was just a cord accident. Her cord had a little bit of like a weak spot in it. And they think that just something I did either tweaked it. And she just lost oxygen for a small amount of time, and passed away. So completely unrelated to Dougie's death. Here we are facing our second loss with two boys at home, who are excited for their sister. And it was very different, a very different experience. I remember we come home from the hospital. We're still in shock of what happened. We deliver, we're gone for 2 days. And, you know, we let the boys come to the hospital to hold her and see her, because we wanted to give them some closure. Yeah. That was important to us. Because they were ready for it. Like, they were ready for her to come. We had made her room was all ready, everything. So, when we got home, I remember Declan looked at Doug and said, all right, Daddy, like, let's go wrestle. And we just like looked at each other like, oh, like, we've got two kids to parent. Like, you know, like, we can't just like sulk like we did with Dougie. Like, this is so different, like such a different feeling. So that was kind of where we ended up. That was in 2019. Oh my gosh, I'm like getting my dates all confused. Yeah, that was 2019, because 2020 was a year. So we're a year and a half out. We're approaching our 7-year anniversary of Dougie passing away. And kind of here we are. We've got two boys now. Everybody asks me, are we going to have another one? I don't think that that's in our cards. I've prayed a ton about it. I pray almost every day about it, just to God, like, show me what's the right decision. If that's in the cards, but I think that we're kind of at a point now where we're kind of like, oh, we don't really miss the baby face. Like, it's kind of nice to have kids that can,
the night.
And... Right. Oh yeah. That's a whole different ballgame. So, but I struggled with that a lot. When I first lost her, and the first probably 6 months, I struggled a lot with depression this time, which I didn't have necessarily. I mean, I had depression with Dougie, but like not long-term. Just something about our second loss just kind of, you know, it being the little girl that I lost and all that was kind of, it was a hard year. I will just say that it was a hard year.
Sure. And I feel like I remember, I think I could be totally making this up, but I feel like, after we had met, this past January or whatever, you had posted something about Ruby and talking about how like lightning literally striked you guys twice. Like who does this happen to? You know what I mean? Like it's very common, I feel like, for early pregnancies, like with miscarriages and, you know, all that kind of stuff. But for late term, like I don't even freaking know what the stats are on that, but that is just like unreal. Like I've never heard of that.
Yeah. So my doctor, who I still think he's an amazing doctor, it was not anybody's fault. I say that Dougie's death could have been prevented if I would have been heard and if I would have known to speak out and to have my voice heard when I was telling them that I wasn't feeling right, that all these things were wrong and no one was listening to me. But with Ruby, it was a little bit different as far as like there was nothing major that happened. It was just an accident and that's that. But I always say that too. Like, I just can't believe that lightning struck us twice. But you know, I'm a believer. I don't know, you know, I know you are, but I don't know, you know, if your readers are, but I'm a huge believer and I say that God has a plan and I don't necessarily know what it's going to be. And I don't know like what that even looks like, but I know that he has a plan for us. So
yeah,
that's kind of where I draw my peace from, to be honest with you. I don't know how anyone who's not a believer could get through any of this. I think that like I have peace that I know I'm going to see them again. And if I didn't have that, how awful would that be?
Right.
You know, like, it's just, you can't even like, I don't even know how someone would live or would go on.
Right. It's so like, it's just so unfathomable, you know, like it's like, I mean, I even hearing your story and even like, as we met, you are, you know, but we talked when we first met about this. But you know, it's just so hard to even wrap your mind around that kind of loss and that kind of, you know, I don't even know what the words are. I don't even have words. I can't even like imagine. I can't even, you know, whatever. And I feel like, do you feel like that with this, like you were just talking about, there's some kind of, you know, I don't think that these things happen for a reason. I think God uses them for good, you know, but yes. Is there people in your life that you have kind of been able to like, I don't want to say mentor, but like, have you been like recommended to people who have been through this type of loss? Kind of like the girl who was in the hospital or the lady that was in the hospital that like spoke to you. Have you been or talked with other moms that have been through this? Has it kind of given you a platform? Do you feel like?
Absolutely. Absolutely. And I've met some of the most amazing women. I would say I'm close friends with at least three of them now. And that's from me being vocal on Facebook, to be honest with you. My friends know, like, I talk about it. So I'll get a message and say, hey, like, I have a friend who just lost their baby. Would you be willing to talk to her? And I would be like, absolutely. Like, I didn't have anybody to talk to.
Right.
I blogged about it after I lost Dougie, because I felt like I didn't know what to do. Like, I'm feeling like that, just, you know, I think it's God who puts it on my heart to like write my feelings. But I blogged about it but I just didn't have anybody else to like relate to or talk to about it. So absolutely. And I will say to any of your listeners, if anybody ever needs anybody to talk to about it, I'm always here. I did a couple like grief groups, never really found my like footing in those. They didn't naturally flow well, so I didn't really stick with them. Mm-hmm. But definitely like one-on-one, like that's been, it helps me. Like, I think it helps me to talk to these moms too,
sure,
about loss and tell my story. And I think that's part of the reason why, like, I was okay with coming on your podcast, because I think that that's like, this is my truth. And this is, although sad, like it's powerful and it's what people need to hear. It's life and it's not all like, you know, rainbows and sunshine. Like, it's messy and it's like, that's why we're here. Right. So that's kind of, you know, I'm okay with sharing it. And I think that, you know, we kind of talked before about, you know, the previous generation being afraid to talk about these things. And I think that it's so, like, I can't imagine how somebody felt 30 years ago when they couldn't talk about it or couldn't tell people. I can't imagine that. And it's interesting. My grandma actually lost her first daughter. Her first daughter was born. I guess this was back in like 1930. And she died at a day. She was one day old and she passed away from an infection or a virus. And I knew her name growing up. But I never talked to my grandma about that. And I remember when I lost Dougie, all I could think about for a long time was my grandma and about how bad she must have grieved without, you know, in silence, basically, without telling anybody. I mean, even us, like, we knew her name. Her name was Paula. But we never talked about her. Like, we were just kind of like, we didn't include her in the sibling count. I mean, she wasn't a sister to my mom. She was just a baby that my grandma had lost. Right. And we just know so much more now that it's important to grieve and to talk about them and to remember them and to include them in your, you know, yes, grandchild count or your kid count or whatever. You know, I think that that's really, really healthy. And although it might be hard, I think it's probably the right way to go about it is to share your story.
Right. And I think that what you're bringing up is so important because it's just this normalizing talking about loss, because it just doesn't happen, you know? And it's like, it doesn't happen because I feel like people feel bad to bring it up. And oh. I remember when we lost ours at 10 weeks, and I remember feeling, and we had a little one. I think that's, I mean, I never had like the experience beforehand, but when you still have to like show up for your kid, you're like, oh my gosh.
Absolutely. Yeah.
And so I remember I luckily, thank God, literally godsend, one of my best friends was there for me like so, so much through this process and this grieving time. And I remember her texting me one morning and she just, the only thing the text said was, "Hey, like I know you would have been 20 weeks today. Like just wondering if it was pink or blue. Like I love you and I'm thinking about you and your baby." And I mean, I just bawled. Like I knew. You know what I mean? Like, right. I knew we were 20 weeks that day.
Right.
And the fact that she, and I, we had talked since, you know, and she was like, "I put it in my phone," because, you know, like you said, life goes on for everyone else. And
right.
I remember waking up that day. I remember like wanting to like even text like my sister or my mom or whatever and be like, and bring it up. But I remember thinking like, "Oh, this is so awkward. Like they're not going to know what to say." Like, and the fact that she texted me that, and in that, and the point is that she just remembered, like, it was just an honoring of the fact that like, we did have a baby that we don't have here on earth, you know? So like, right. Do you feel like you've experienced, like, do you feel the same way where when people bring up Dougie and Ruby, it is gut wrenching in the sense that like, you just miss them with every fiber of your being, but still like people talking about them and that just honors their life in general.
Exactly. Exactly. And I think that, you know, I've had like open conversations with people about this and they'll say like, "Well, we just don't want to make you sad," or like, "Well, you're not making me sad." Like I've already thought about them at some point during the day.
Trust me. I have been as sad as I could possibly be.
Right.
Already.
Right. And like, if anything, I think that it's at this point for me, it's joyful to like talk about them and know like, yeah, I have four babies. I don't just have my two boys here. Like I have two other children. So I definitely think that that's, if you're a friend on the other side, doing that in little texts like that mean more than they probably know. And that's, I've had a couple friends just like that, that will text me, a couple of the other lost moms that I've become close with, like we'll text each other on hard days or we have the dates written down or, I just think about all the people who don't have someone that reaches out to them like you and I did. And that's sad. And that's why I share. because I want people to know, like, it's okay. And if this happens to someone, you know, like, this is what you should do or what you shouldn't do, or just, you know, be there for them.
Absolutely. And I remember being at a mom's group one time, and I remember I can't even remember exactly what we were doing, but I remember we were making these necklaces. And they were basically like, I mean, they were very like simple, like they were a piece of string and then they had pink and blue beads in the middle. And I had, gosh, it had been 5 years since we had miscarried or something. Like it was kind of, mm-hmm. you know, like just a long distant kind of thing. I could talk about it very openly. Like I'm the same. I get all those texts. Hey, my friend just, you know, miscarried. Can you talk to them or whatever? I get the same thing. I'm very open about it. I can talk about it. And for whatever reason, the fact that there was only pink or blue, and I was sitting in a mom's group looking around at probably 50 women, and our baby was 10 weeks. I don't know if it was a girl or a boy, you know? Right. And so I'm like, I'm not even a crier. I literally just broke down crying. I'm like, why are there not white beads?
Right, right.
Like I guarantee. Right. And I mean, I just started, it was a whole thing. And I just started bawling. I'm like, you guys, like, I know that I'm not the only one that has a baby that's not here. Like, I don't know if it's pink or blue. Anywhere in the world, like in a mom's group, I should be able to count that baby, because I don't say that I have four boys or I don't say that I have five kids, you know? Right. And like that is sometimes it's totally natural because, you know, especially if it's like an acquaintance. Yeah, I have four boys. But like people that know me know, you know, they're like, we love your angel baby or whatever. But it's like, in certain spaces, we really should be able to count these babies, you know? And it's just like, man, it's just such a sad thing. I feel like that if they're not here with us, there's just this, like, they don't count kind of thing. Yeah. So what do you feel like? Can we go into really quick the conversation? Because I think this is really important. I think this is really tangible for just listeners who have not experienced loss. What was really helpful to you and really life-giving to you when this happened, and what was not very helpful, with the all knowing that everyone just no one knows what to say, right? Like nobody knows the perfect words, but just like there are some specific things I think we've talked about a little bit. Like what is really helpful and what was not.
So I think that I know that no one knows what to say, but I have one friend who showed up after Ruby and she just looked at me and she said, just that, I have no clue what to say to you right now, but I'm going to give you a hug. So we just hugged and we cried. Like she was like, I literally have no words. So I would say just show up, call them, text them, you know, don't ask them.
Put the date in your phone.
Right. Yeah. Put the date in your phone. Remember their birthday. Remember, I don't know, just be there for them. And I think that, you know, people are going to ask you like, oh, how are you doing? Well, we say we're fine. Like that's just what we do. And I think that that's like, we're not going to tell you like, well, today was a really shitty day. Like I cried all day. I cried for 6 hours. Like I couldn't get it together. So we're not going to say that. So I say, just show up, call, text, and be a little bit annoying. Like just let them know that you're there no matter what, and that you're going to walk through this deep valley with them when things are at their worst. Mm-hmm. And I know like a lot of people will say like, let me know how you can help, how I can be help. I can help you. And I hated that, like even with Ruby and with Dougie, especially, I don't know. I can't even like muster the energy to eat, let alone tell you like what's going to help me. So I would say offer to take the kids for a bit if they do have other kids at home, because that was the one thing with when we had Tatum and Declan at home, I never got the chance to sit and breathe and like grieve deep, because I always had my boys and it was always, you just always have to be on for them and you don't want them to see you sad all the time. So, you know, and she might say, no, it's okay, I've got this, because that's what I would have said, because that's just how I am. I don't offer help very easily. Or I don't accept help when it's offered to me. Right. So insist, hey, I'm coming by, I'm going to be at, you know, somebody's house. I remember when one of my friends like said, you know, when we lost Ruby, she said like, hey, I'm going to my mom's and we're only going to be there an hour, but I want to take the boys with me. And that's what she did. Like, she picked them up and took them for an hour. And I still remember that. You know, have a meal delivered, groceries delivered is a great idea too. I think that Doug and I both, after Dougie, had a really hard time even going to the grocery store. And it was just weird. I remember, I'll tell a quick story about Doug. I don't think he'll care. I hope not, at least.
If he does, we can edit.
Right. it was the day that we lost Dougie. We had no other kids at home, obviously. And I was starving. We had just got home from the hospital, and he went out to get some Subway. And he walked into Subway and turned right back around. And he came back home and he said, I can't do it. I couldn't do it. And he said he got in there and just to see the world moving at a normal pace, like, these people are ordering like their Subway Club and they don't know that I just lost my child.
What are they thinking?
Right. So I think like things like that, like making it to where they don't have to face the world for a little while if they don't want to. I think it was a little bit harder. It's a little bit harder when you have kids, obviously, because like when we got home, we still had soccer. Declan had soccer, you know, so we still had things to do. But just,
do you feel like that was helpful, or do you feel like it was like you just needed some freaking time?
You know, Doug and I talk about this often, and I don't really know, honestly. I think with Dougie, I was able to grieve a little bit deeper because I was able to, I took off work. I didn't go back to work for 2 months. And I was able to just, you know, I would look at his picture like, you know, 8 hours a day. Well, not really 8 hours, yeah. But you know what I mean?
I would look at
his picture and I would cry. And so I think that the boys with Ruby were a blessing in disguise because they took my mind off of her. But I also think that I saw a counselor. Doug and I both saw a counselor after Dougie and Ruby. But with Ruby, I took it a little bit harder and went to a little bit more in-depth counseling simply because that was what I needed because I had the boys at home, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure.
So I think that I can't really answer it. I mean, it's different both ways.
Well, you don't know any different on either side. Right. You know what I mean?
Right, so, right. Yeah. So, I mean, it's definitely with Dougie, the empty arm syndrome, they call it, like where your arms physically ache. Was definitely a real thing. I never had that once with Ruby, and I think it's because of my boys. Mm. I'm trying to think if there's anything else that was major. I mean, I think we kind of touched on it, like just talk about my baby, you know, say their name is basically what I want people to do. And, you know, I had a couple friends who obviously were not really close anymore, but they kind of avoided me. I had a pregnant friend who didn't want, like, I could tell, like, she avoided me. And I don't know, like, I kind of felt like the plague after Dougie for a little bit, because mm-hmm. I felt like, oh, people don't want to get around me and like talk about it. Like, will they catch it? I don't, you know, yeah. So you just feel like that.
It. Oh my gosh.
Right. Right. Yeah. And I think you just feel like that. And you just think like, I don't want people to feel weird around me. I don't.
Right.
You know, like I don't want people to feel uncomfortable, but I also like, this is also my life and my grieving and this is how I'm dealing with it.
Right. Right. It's like when you start to, when I will like bring it up to people, just in general, you can kind of feel the vibe where they're like, oh, this is weird now.
Yeah.
And I'm like, I'm sorry. Did this make you uncomfortable? Because I truly think that that is part of the issue, right? It's the part of the issue is that we have dealt with this. We have become strong in this because it's a hand we were dealt. You had your hand that you were dealt. And so you figured out how to live life with that. And other people haven't. They haven't had to do that. And so I feel like it's part of us, which is crap, but it is what it is. You know, part of us kind of want to like, I don't know, we don't want to make other people uncomfortable because we know how to deal with it. We know how to talk about it. We could talk about it, our babies, all day long. But we know other people aren't equipped with that because they haven't been faced with that. And so it's almost this like sheltering of other people, I have found at least, where I'm like, okay, I can bring this up around you. You get super awkward. Like,
right.
There's like definitely people, I feel like, you know, whatever. I feel like what was super helpful for us, like we, there was, who was it? Somebody gave us like a charm bracelet or something.
Oh, yeah, I got one of those.
Yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, like something like that. I had bought even like a, it was like, you know that one, that open heart charm on those Pandora bracelets were like really popular.
Yeah.
I got one of those with like our baby's birthstone. We used to let go like a Chinese lantern on their birthday or their due date, I guess. And so that was always something that was really special. I feel like the one thing for us that was always the I just wanted to punch someone in the face every time I heard it, even though I know everyone means well, is the phrase "at least." Like if I heard one more time, "at least you were only 10 weeks," or "at least you already have a kid at home," or "at least you guys are young, like you can always try again," or "at least whatever." Like if I could scream from the rooftops one thing, period, to never say to anyone, whether it's losing a child, a relative, a dog, you know, I don't really freaking care what it is.
Right.
Like anybody that's going through a loss, like the words "at least" should never come out of your mouth, because to me, what that did was it took away my right to grieve for this specific baby.
Right.
Did you ever get that?
Oh, yes. Oh, yeah. I mean, I did get the "at least" some with Dougie. With Ruby, by the time we lost Ruby, everybody knew me. It was like, I'm pretty open and like, I'm pretty blunt with people. So I didn't experience that with Ruby because people, you know, they've heard my story and they know me and they know that I share and all that. But I think that just goes back to, you know, we all grieve for our babies and the children or people they would have become. And that regardless of if you're 10 weeks or 40 weeks or 30 weeks or 20 weeks or whatever, I do kind of feel like stillbirth is kind of a middle ground, because I feel like miscarriage is talked about way more than stillbirth. I feel like, you know, and then you have infant death that obviously you hear about. So I feel like stillbirth is still like that middle ground. But I can't say that my grief was worse than your grief. Like I'm not there. I'm not you. And I don't claim to understand a mother's heart who's never learned the sex of their baby or never saw their baby's face or heard a heartbeat or anything like that. Just as you don't know how I felt, doing those things. So I think that that's what's important to remember, is that everybody grieves differently, that, you know, I wouldn't say any of those terms. I literally would just shut up and say, like, I have no clue what to say to you, but I love you and I want to give you a hug. That's
and
what I would
do. Pasta.
Right. And here's some food for later when you don't want to go to Subway.
Right. Yes, I completely agree. And I think that it's such a hard thing too, because I think that there is a, I don't want to say there's a comparison game because there's not, but I do think that, you know, there is some of this, exactly what you were saying, you know, well, I was only 10 weeks. Well, we didn't know the gender. Well, we didn't, you know, ever hold our baby. Well, that was, anyways, I'm not gonna get into that. But, or you have people who have, you know, chemical pregnancies. You have people who lose, you know, without ever seeing a heartbeat. You have the 20 week, you have the whole freaking gamut. And underneath everything, I think that we could probably like understand that like some might be more like gut wrenching than the next. Like, I don't think that there's any blur lines on that. However, the underlying sadness in our souls is that there is a baby that should be here that isn't.
Right.
And you know, like the second you get that positive pregnancy test or you start to feel sick, like you start to plan the nursery, you start to like imagine things. So whether you lose them early or you lose them late, it's just that what could have been that breaks our heart.
Right. And it's literally like your dreams just dying. That's what's hard too. I mean, it's hard. And that's one of the things that, you know, I definitely don't say that stillbirth and miscarriage are the same thing. I don't think that at all. But I think we all grieve and we all hope and dream and plan. And I think it's all sad and it's all awful.
Right. Absolutely. All right, girl. Well, do you have, any like final, I don't know, just any final things? I know we kind of wrapped up already with just saying like, just show up with some food and be there for the people. But do you have any like last words on like what would be super helpful or anything if anyone is like going through this right now? Any last words that you want to say to them?
I'll give you a couple links that were pretty helpful to me, that I found helpful, like a podcast that I listened to on repeat that were helpful that you can kind of post in your show notes for your readers. But I would say just show up, walk with them through this time and be a friend and love on them. And that's what I would say.
Yep. And don't back away because you're uncomfortable. Yes. Like lean in.
Right.
Lean into that uncomfortable.
If you back away, your friendship is going to end, because I had several of those that happened too.
Mm, yeah. Because that's literally, you just need them, you know, you're at your most vulnerable space. So you can't have people abandon you at that moment in time. I totally get that.
Exactly.
Totally get that. Well, Alex, thank you so much for being on and sharing your story. And I know that you blog and you have, you know, you have your whole business as well. Can you just, for anybody who's listening, especially in the Cincinnati area, can you just share maybe where they can find you or where they can kind of catch up with you?
Yeah. So I have a blog called Mothering Chaos, and you can find me on Facebook, on Instagram. Mothering Chaos Cincy is the Insta. And then on Facebook, it's a Mothering Chaos page that I post. But I post a lot about events going on. I mean, obviously with COVID, that's all weird now, but whatever. So I post a lot about events, things to do with your little kids, good hikes, just kind of run the gamut of everything that you would like to find around the city. You could probably find it on my blog.
Yes, it is awesome. One of your blogs I read about all the enclosed parks or whatever. I'm like, that's so written by a mother. I can't even tell you.
Yeah, I started that blog when my boys were like one, and I was like, why does this not exist? So it's been around for about 3 years now.
That's awesome. Well, Alex, thank you so much for coming on the show.
Okay, great, Stephanie. Thank you for having me.
All right, you guys, thank you so much for just allowing this space for this story to be told. I think that is so important to have a platform where we can talk about this and start to change the narrative, because here's the deal, is that that's their reality. You know, like that is the life that they live. They are keenly aware that there are two babies that should be here that are not. And you know, I guarantee a woman who has gone through something similar, some type of loss, and whether you know it or not, it's there, and their reality is what it is. And I know it's so hard sometimes to just lean into a situation where someone has experienced this kind of loss, because we don't want to say the wrong thing, right? We don't want to make them upset. But I think I can speak on behalf of, you know, specifically here, Alex and Doug, like they've already experienced the deepest grief they will ever experience. And so you remembering and honoring their two babies, like that is a sense of joy. Right? Like that brings joy that you remember them, that you honor them, just like she was saying in this episode. So I encourage you, if you know a woman in your life who has experienced some kind of loss, text them, ask them like, hey, what was the due date of your baby or whatever, and put it in your phone and just shoot a quick text. Because like she was saying, it's so odd that the world just keeps going. And it's almost as if that never happened. And so by reminding us about our babies is not reminding us of the grief, though we long for them. It is reminding us that like they're a part of us and that you are aware. And that brings us joy. And guys, make sure you check out the show notes. We're going to have some articles and just some resources in there if you have either experienced loss or if you have been in a situation where someone you love has experienced loss. So these are just meant to help you and support you the best they can. And I will see you guys next week.